Okay, so thank you for joining today's lecture via Zoom. Today what I'm going to talk about are an application of the eigenvalue problem. It's used to simplify an otherwise more complicated matrix, making it into a much simpler matrix. The target matrix is going to be what we call a diagonal matrix. So let me tell you a little bit about that. So we say that a square matrix is diagonal if its non-zero entries only occur along the main diagonal from the upper left to the lower right. Let me give you a picture. So here, this matrix D in the bottom slot of the slide here is in diagonal form. Its only non-zero entries occur in that diagonal from the upper left-hand corner to the lower right-hand corner. What's nice about diagonal matrices is, first of all, they have far fewer components to deal with, right? In general, an n by n matrix is going to have n squared components. While for a diagonal matrix, the only non-zero entries are the one along this main diagonal. So that makes it simpler. But also, its multiplicative properties are going to be much easier as well. Suppose I have two diagonal matrices. If I multiply them together, well, what happens here is, using the usual rules of matrix multiplication, where you take dot products of the first row of the first factor with columns of the second factor, most of those are going to evaluate to zero. And in fact, if you have two diagonal matrices, the only entries that survive the multiplication are again going to be diagonal entries. All the other entries are zeros. So a diagonal matrix times a diagonal matrix is going to be a diagonal matrix. And moreover, if the entries of that product of diagonal matrices, they can compute it really simply. Instead of having to take dot products of row vectors with column vectors, you simply have to multiply entries together. So that first diagonal entry of the product is the first diagonal entry of D times the first diagonal entry of D prime. The second diagonal entry of the product is going to be the second diagonal entry of D times the second diagonal entry of D prime, etc. That's not only true for matrix multiplication, but also when we multiply basis vector or vectors by diagonal matrices, these things are much simpler as well. For example, if you take a standard basis vector, let me work this out in detail for a 2x2 example. Let's say A is equal to 1, 2, well, that's non-diagonal. Let's say it's 2, 3, 0. So this is a diagonal 2x2 matrix whose diagonal entries in order are 2 and 3. Let's take a standard basis vector. Here's the first one, and here's the second standard basis vector written as columns. If I multiply either one of these standard basis vectors by this diagonal matrix, something nice happens. A times E1, for example, is going to be 2, 0, 0, 3 times 1, 0. Now we do that product explicitly. We'll have 2 plus 0 is 2. 0 plus 0 is 0. And what we get is effectively 2 times that first standard basis vector. And similarly, when we multiply the second standard basis vector by that diagonal matrix, 0, 1, well, when we compute this product explicitly, it works out to be, well, first entry is going to be 0. 0, 2 times 0 is 0, plus 0 times 1 is 0. 0 times 0 is 0, plus 3 times 1 is 3. And that's just equal to 3 times E2. So look at this miracle. When I have a diagonal matrix and I multiply standard basis vectors, what happens is those standard basis vectors end up being eigenvectors for the diagonal matrix. And in fact, their eigenvalues, eigenvalue corresponding to this first standard basis vector is exactly the first diagonal entry of A. The eigenvalue for the second standard basis vector is exactly the second diagonal entry of A. And so not only is matrix multiplication in general simpler, but multiplying standard basis vectors is especially easy. In general, what you're going to have, well, I think I've written it down on the slide here. If you have a diagonal matrix times a standard basis vector, it's just going to be the ith diagonal entry of D is going to be the eigenvector, or the eigenvalue corresponding to the ith standard basis vector. Now, that only makes the action, computing the action of a diagonal matrix on standard basis vectors easy, but even more general vectors as well. Because what you could do, take an arbitrary vector with entries v1 through vn, expand this vector in terms of standard basis vectors, you get an expression like on this top line, but then you can distribute that matrix product over the individual terms here, and you can move the matrix through those scalar factors of v1, v2, etc. And so what happens? The diagonal matrix times an arbitrary vector v is just going to, well, simply compute it. All you have to do is take the entries of v and multiply each entry by the corresponding diagonal entry of a. So the first component of this product is going to be the first diagonal entry of d times the first entry of v. The second component is going to be the second entry of v times the second diagonal entry of the matrix d, etc. So all these computations become much simpler. And what usually happens when computations become simpler, what you can do with them, your understanding of the computation also simplifies as well. So in short, what we're going to try to do is, if we're given a matrix that's not diagonal, we're going to look for a way to find an equivalent matrix, a matrix D that is diagonal, that might be easier to deal with than the original matrix we were given. All right, so that leads me to this concept of diagonalizability. Suppose you have a matrix that's not necessarily diagonalized. So it's not necessarily a diagonal matrix, but we'll say that it's diagonalizable if we can somehow convert it into a diagonal matrix. What that's going to require of us is some matrix C that's going to carry out the conversion for us. And it's supposed to work like this. There's an invertible matrix C such that when I multiply A from the left by the inverse of C, and I multiply A from the right by C itself, what's supposed to pop out is a diagonal matrix. When we can arrange that to happen, we'll regard C as converting A into a diagonal matrix. And later on, I'm not sure if we're going to get to it this semester because much of this course has been abridged, either to sick days or to snow days, holidays, etc. Well, I'm probably going to end up being about 5 lectures short of the normal course. But normally what I would do after I introduce this concept of diagonalizability is I try to show you that this matrix C that does the diagonalization of A is interpretable as just simply making a change of coordinates. But we may not actually get to that. What we'll do today is I'll simply show you let me get the slides in order here. We'll simply show you how you can diagonalize a matrix A. And what we'll find is the eigenvector eigenvalue problem that we considered in the two earlier lectures this week, that's the crucial step of diagonalizing an arbitrary matrix A. And in fact, once you've solved the eigenvector eigenvalue problem for A, you will have effectively also solved the problem of finding a matrix C that will convert A into a diagonal matrix. All right, so let me proceed with that. What this is going to be based upon is two simple matrix identities that I could have been induced maybe in the second week of the course when we were discussing matrix multiplication explicitly. The specialization I'm going to do here is I'm going to choose one matrix, C, and I'm going to think of it as a matrix that I create by taking a bunch of column vectors and combining them together until I get an n by n matrix. So I want these columns to be each have n entries in it. When I have n separate columns, what I'm going to get is an n by n matrix. So rather than specify this matrix in terms of all its components, C11, C12, et cetera, I'm going to look at a sort of an intermediate presentation of this matrix, treating its columns as if they were vectors. And what we'll study in this next couple of slides is what happens when I multiply a matrix like this times an arbitrary matrix. And in fact, that's the contents of this first lemma. So in this lemma, A is any matrix you want, but C is a matrix that's n by n, and we've also represented it in terms of its column vectors. The statement is that I can do matrix multiplication of the matrix C from the left by an arbitrary matrix A, and the result will be a matrix that's kind of written in the same way. I'm going to specify the product A times C. I'm going to write it. It's going to be another n by n matrix, but I'm going to write it in terms of its columns as I did for C itself. And what it works out to be is A times the first column. So this will be an n by n matrix. It can multiply an n by 1 matrix and produce another n by 1 matrix. So note that A times C1 is going to be an n by n times an n by 1. What it's going to kick out is going to be an n by 1 matrix. This makes the multiplication defined, and the exterior dimensions give you the result of the product. So what's going to end up here is a column vector with n entries. So, and once I've done that to each of the columns of A, I end up with an n by n matrix that's going to, in fact, coincide with the actual product I would get by taking the rows of A and taking their dot products with the columns of C to get the entire product AC. All right, so let me give you an example that shows you why this identity is true. Effectively, it says we can compute the action of left multiplication by a matrix A on an arbitrary matrix C by just knowing how A acts on the individual columns of C. All right, so here's how it works for a 2x2 example. So I've written two matrices, A and C, in very generic notation. And when I multiply them together, that means, for example, to get this 1-1 entry, I have to take the dot product of the first row of A with the first column of C. The second entry in the first row of the product is going to be the dot product of the first row of the first factor and the second column of the second factor. The usual computation. Now look what happens when A multiplies a particular column of the matrix C. So what I've got here, C11 above C21, is just that first column of A. We'll do that matrix multiplication. And what gets kicked out? Well, look at this. What the matrix I end up with is exactly the first column of the matrix product AC. And similarly, when I see how A acts on the second column of C, I get exactly the second column of the matrix product A times C. So this identity, that matrix multiplication of an arbitrary matrix, n by n matrix C, can be computed simply by knowing how A acts on the columns of C, that's true. Next, I want to look at what happens when I again specify a matrix in terms of its column, but this time I'm going to multiply C, not from the right, but from the left by a diagonal matrix. And here's the corresponding identity. If I have a matrix with all diagonal entries and I multiply it from the right times an arbitrary matrix whose columns are lowercase c1 through lowercase cn, what happens is pretty simple. The result of multiplying these two matrices together is just that the first column of C gets changed to that first diagonal entry times the first column. What will happen to the second column is the second diagonal entry of D will multiply the second column of C, and we'll just get now the scalar multiple of the second column of C by the second diagonal entry of D. That will be the second column. And so the second identity that we want is when a matrix C is multiplied from the opposite side by a diagonal matrix, the only thing that happens is the matrix C gets changed by these diagonal entries, but it's in a kind of a simple way. Lambda 2 times the second column be written vertically, and the last column would be the last diagonal entry of D times the last column vector of C written vertically. Okay, so two identities that are basically identities that follow from the usual rules of matrix multiplication. Here on this slide, I'll prove that lemma. So a matrix is diagonal if its only non-zero entries occur when the row index is equal to the column index. Otherwise, the entries are all zero. So I'll write the entries of a diagonal entry in this fashion. Then when I multiply matrices together, what I do is I take the dot product of rows of the first factor with columns of the second factor. That's what this sum represents. It's a dot product of a row vector I with a column vector, the jth column of D. Now, the way my notation is, I'm going to use this boldface font to indicate the kth column. So that's where I fix the index k to be some fixed number, and I just vary the row index to get the entries of that column vector. And then the diagonal entries of, or the entries of this matrix D are given by, well, this lambda I times this Kronecker delta, delta ij. And what you can observe from this is what I'm circling here is this formula computes all the entries of the product C times D, but once I fix that jth column, I'll be looking at a particular column of the product. And what we see is the entries in that column are just the entries of the matrix C in the jth column times the corresponding diagonal entry of D. It's exactly this identity here that I've written on the pad and put in the box. Okay, so now what I can do is use these two identities to describe more explicitly what it takes to diagonalize a matrix. All right, so here, let's start off with an arbitrary but square matrix. And we're looking for a matrix C that's going to allow us to convert A into a diagonal matrix. What I'm going to use is these two identities, and it will tell us precisely how to construct the matrix C and the matrix D that does this diagonalization of A. All I have to do is take the desired condition, C minus first, A times C is equal to D, and multiply both sides of that condition by the matrix C. Now what's going to happen is when you have C the minus first times A times C is equal to D, that's our diagonalization condition. C is converting A into D. Well, when we, once we multiply both sides of that by C, we're going to get, well, C times C the minus first is the identity matrix. And the identity matrix times AC is just going to produce AC. On the opposite side, we'll have C times D. And so the condition we want, it's going to imply that A times C has to equal C times D. And now let's employ these two identities that tell us another way of writing C times a matrix A, or A times a matrix C, or C times a diagonal matrix D. Exploiting those two identities, what we get is, well, first of all, AC is equal to the matrix A times each of the columns of C, written in their natural order. So that explains the right-hand side. Meanwhile, the left-hand side, we can compute that. It's going to end up being the columns of the matrix C, but each has been multiplied by the diagonal entries of D. In fact, the first column of C has been multiplied by the first diagonal entry of D, etc. And so when we compare the columns of both sides of this identity, it means that A times C1 is equal to a scalar multiple of C1. And that scalar multiple, therefore, is exactly an eigenvalue of A, because A times this vector is producing a scalar multiple of that vector. So what happened, because of the matrix multiplication identities, first of all, C minus first, A times C is equal to D. That's the condition we want, is equivalent to CA is equal to C times D, which is telling us that A times the first column, I'm going to write this matrix down, it's going to equal, let's do the first column of this. It's going to be the first diagonal entry of the diagonal matrix times that first column. And now we compare the two entries, and we see that A times C1 has to equal lambda 1 times C1, meaning C1 is an eigenvector of A with eigenvalue lambda 1. Now that's just looking at the first column, but the second column would be similar. It would be A times C2. The second column on this side would be the second diagonal entry of D times the second column of C. And again, A times C2 is going to be a scalar multiple of C2 because we have this identity. Both sides have to agree exactly. And in general, A times the ith column of C is going to be exactly the ith diagonal entry of D times the ith column of C. So this is going to be true for all I from 1 to n. All right, so in review, the diagonalization problem is to convert a non-diagonal matrix into a diagonal matrix. What these calculations show is that for this to happen, we need this identity, and this identity in turn requires that each column of C has to be an eigenvector of A, and each diagonal entry of the diagonal matrix D has to be an eigenvalue of A. Moreover, they have to be correlated in this fashion. The eigenvalue corresponding to that first eigenvector. So this C1 has to be an eigenvector, and in fact, its eigenvalue has to be exactly equal to the first diagonal entry of D. So this now leads us to an algorithm for computing both the matrix C that diagonalizes A and the diagonal matrix D that A is converted into via this matrix multiplication by C. Here's how it works. What we'll do is we'll find, first of all, let's assume we've solved the eigenvector eigenvalue problem for the matrix A. We found all its eigenvalues by finding the zeros of the characteristic polynomial, and then for each eigenvalue, we've calculated a corresponding eigenvector. All right, so what we'll do is we'll take the eigenvectors we found, and we'll use them to form a matrix C. So what I'll choose for let's create a matrix C from the eigenvectors of A. So C is going to, use slightly different notation. It's going to be some eigenvector of A, and then for the second column, I'll use another eigenvector of A, etc. And I'll need a total of n columns for this n by n matrix. So I'll need n eigenvectors of the matrix A to create this matrix C. And these are going to be eigenvectors, and so A times either of them, any one of these, is just going to be some eigenvalue times the matrix itself. Okay, so I make a matrix C this way. And then what I can also do is I've got these eigenvectors arranged in a natural order. From whatever I chose to be the first one, it's going to have a first eigenvalue. Whatever I chose to be the second eigenvector, it's going to have its own eigenvalue as well. What I'm going to do is I'm going to create a diagonal matrix writing down these eigenvalues in the same order as their eigenvectors have been written here. So I'll put lambda 1 here, corresponding to this first column, and 0 everywhere else in those row. And then the second diagonal entry of D, I'll use the eigenvalue corresponding to this eigenvector of A. I fill out, since I have n eigenvectors, I'll fill out the diagonal entry that way. And then what's going to happen here is that A times C is now going to equal C times D automatically. Because we know how A acts on the C. It just multiplies each of these vectors. Each of these column vectors gets multiplied by A, but since they're eigenvectors, I'm just going to get lambda I times Ci for any of these columns in this product. But also, the same thing is going to happen here when I multiply the column matrix or the matrix C by the diagonal matrix D. It's going to multiply each of the columns of C by the appropriate diagonal entry of D. And this identity is going to be maintained automatically. So if we multiply both sides by C the minus first, then we get the desired identity. C the minus first times AC is going to equal, well, C the minus first times C is going to equal the identity matrix. The identity matrix times D is going to just equal D. So the identity we want. The diagonalization of the matrix A by this auxiliary matrix C. All right, so that's how you diagonalize a matrix. You do so by, given a matrix A, you find all its eigenvalues, and you find all its eigenvectors. You arrange the eigenvectors into an n by n matrix, and then what will happen is that A times C is automatically going to equal C times D. And then we multiply both sides by the inverse of A, and we're able to diagonalize the matrix A explicitly. However, there's one caveat here. And I was a little bit cavalier when I said, okay, once we get to this equation, all we have to do is multiply by the inverse of C. Except what we've known for a long time now is that not every matrix has an inverse. So this step here, it might not work if the matrix C that we construct from the eigenvectors of A, if it doesn't have an inverse, then it's not going to work. But so long as we can invert the matrix C that we construct in this fashion, then we will be able to diagonalize the matrix A. All right, so I'll talk a little bit more about this this caveat to our diagonalization of A in a minute. Let's work out explicitly a nice 2x2 example where everything goes smoothly. All right, so, I somehow lost my slides here. Let me bring them back. I have no idea where they went. Let's see. Here we go. Slides. There we are. Good. And good. We're right at the diagonalization algorithm. All right. So what I'm going to do in this next slide is work out this example. Okay. So in this example of a 2x2 matrix that's not diagonal, I'm going to find a matrix C that's actually going to diagonalize it. The first step is going to be to solve the eigenvector eigenvalue problem for the matrix A that we're trying to diagonalize. So first thing we do is we find the eigenvalues of A. That means looking at the characteristic polynomial, the determinant of A minus lambda times the identity matrix. That's going to produce a polynomial in the parameter lambda. We set that equal to zero to find the roots. And it's pretty obvious that for this example, the eigenvalues are going to be the numbers 2 and the numbers negative 1. Those are the values of lambda for which the characteristic polynomial vanishes. All right. First step of the eigenvector eigenvalue problem is to find the eigenvalues. Then, for each eigenvalue, we're going to find the corresponding eigenvector. So, for that first eigenvalue, lambda equal 2, let me use the pad to keep our results available to us. 2, 0, 0, minus 1 was A, and what we found are eigenvalues. Lambda is either equal to 2 or negative 1. And now we're focusing on lambda equals 2, and we want its eigenvector, or the eigenspace. E subscript 2, the set of all vectors, two-dimensional vectors, for which that are eigenvectors for A with eigenvalue 2. That amounts to solving a linear system with coefficient matrix. So we want that is going to be the null space of the matrix we create by subtracting from A the eigenvalue along its diagonal entries. All right. And so I'm computing here. I compute that this matrix. Let's subtract the number 2 from the diagonal entries of A. And what we get is A minus 2 times I is going to equal 2 minus 2 is 0. That doesn't change. That doesn't change. Here's a diagonal entry. Minus 1 minus that eigenvalue is going to be negative 3. So this is Now, this is the matrix we want, but we quickly reduce to reduce row echelon form, and what we get is a matrix with components. You can see that I can renormalize this row so that its pivot is 1. That leads to that. And I can also use that first pivot to clear out the entry here. So that's going to be the reduced row echelon entry form of this matrix. And now we can solve the corresponding linear system. A minus 2 times Ix is equal to 0. And you can more or less read off the solution from the form of this coefficient matrix in reduced row echelon form. First row says x2 is equal to 0, and the second row, since 0 is equal to 0, this column, this first column, doesn't have a pivot, so that makes x1 a free parameter, and so our solution vector is going to have a free parameter in the first slot, 0 in the second slot, or x1 times 1, 0. All right, so here's a basis vector for the solution set of the linear system corresponding to this matrix. And this is our eigenvector, corresponding to the eigenvalue lambda equal 2 that we started off with. All right, so I've done this calculation also on the slides. And what we end up with is an eigenvalue 2 and a corresponding eigenvector 1, 0. But back on the pad here, we have another eigenvalue to deal with as well. So I'll deal with that on the next slide. It's a similar calculation. To find the eigenspace, we calculate the null space of a particular matrix. The matrix we get by subtracting from the diagonal elements of our original matrix, the eigenvalue that we're interested in. That works out to be this matrix. Luckily, in this case, it turns out to be already in reduced row echelon form. We solve the corresponding linear system, and its solution set is going to be a free parameter x2 times the vector with components minus 2, 1. And so this vector minus 2 in the first component, 1 in the second component, is going to be the eigenvector of the original matrix A corresponding to the eigenvalue negative 1. All right, so what I've done on the last two slides here is I've given you a matrix A, 2, 6, 0, minus 1, I think, and I've found an eigenvalue 2 with eigenvector, I'll just write it V2. The subscript here is indicating the eigenvalue, and it's the vector 1, 0. And we had a second eigenvalue, lambda equals minus 1, and it had an eigenvector given by the negative 1, which was minus 2, 1. All right, so we now have the ingredients from which we can construct a matrix C that will diagonalize A. In fact, we'll get a matrix C such that C to the minus first times A times C is actually equal to a diagonal matrix. The way we get C is we take the eigenvectors we found and we use them to form the columns of this matrix C. So that's going to be 1, 0. And the second column is going to be the second eigenvector, minus 2, 1. In fact, we're also going to know that the diagonal matrix that C converts A into is going to be exactly the diagonal matrix where we use these two eigenvalues as its entries. What we do for the matrix D is we have a first column. Its eigenvalue, the eigenvalue corresponding to this eigenvector of A is 2. So I'll put 2 in that first diagonal entry. And then for the second diagonal entry in this slot down here, well, it's got to be an eigenvector of A corresponding to the eigenvalue minus 1. So I guess I've changed notation here. I'm going to use this, since I use this eigenvector for the second column of C, I have to use the second eigenvalue for the second diagonal entry of A. And then the other entries of D are, since it's diagonal, are just going to be 0. Okay, so I claim that having found the eigenvalues of A and their corresponding eigenvectors, I can solve this problem simply by using the eigenvectors as the columns of C and using the eigenvalues as the diagonal entries of D. Let me demonstrate that this actually worked in this example. So there's, here I'm repeating this construction of this matrix C as well. This is going to pop out automatically. Now, okay, so suppose I create C in exactly the fashion I've described. I've listed the eigenvectors of A, and I've arranged them as the columns of a matrix C. Now, since we're working with 2x2 matrices, I have a nice formula by which I can compute the inverse of C. I don't have to do any row reduction. I can use the cofactor expansion formula that can be applied to 2x2 matrices. This is effectively 1 over the determinant of A times the transpose of the cofactor matrix of A. But the cofactor matrix of A is pretty simple. The cofactors are always going to be determinants of 1x1 matrices, so just going to be the entries of those matrices. And in fact, for an arbitrary 2x2 matrix, you can get its inverse by, let me work on the slide here. What you end up doing to get the inverse of an arbitrary 2x2 matrix is you reverse the order of the diagonal entries, and then you reverse the sign of the off-diagonal entries. And so using this formula, I can, first of all, I can compute the determinant of C, 1 times 1 minus 2 times 0, using the difference of diagonal products. So this AD minus BC is going to work out to be exactly the number 1. And what happens to get the entries of the matrix product of this inverse is I reverse the diagonal entries. Well, they're both equal to 1, so they don't appear to change. But I also have to reverse the sign of the off diagonal entries. So negative 2 is going to go to 2, and 0 is going to go to negative 0 or 0. So there's the inverse of C computed without using any row reduction. And now I'll verify that C to the minus first times A times C ends up being exactly this diagonal the diagonal matrix we create using the eigenvalues of A. We start computing. First, I multiply, I guess, the first two factors together. They work out to be the product of the first two factors is the matrix 2, 4, 0, minus 4. I multiply again, and what happens is I get exactly the diagonal matrix that was predicted. As long as I create the matrix C using eigenvectors of A, and I create the diagonal matrix D by using the eigenvalues of A, written in the same order as I've written these columns here. So that first diagonal entry is the eigenvalue corresponding to the eigenvector I used for the first column of C. As long as I correlated the columns of the first factor with the eigenvalues I use to create the matrix C, this identity is guaranteed. Okay, so that's essentially how you solve the eigenvector eigenvalue problem. up to that caveat that I mentioned at the start. To achieve this diagonalization, you need a matrix C that you can, for which you can convert its inverse. And that's not always possible. And what we'll talk about on Monday is we'll find a number of simpler conditions by which we determine whether or not this matrix C that we construct from the eigenvector of A, how we can know at an earlier stage whether or not it's invertible. So what I'll start with on Monday, right, is the basic theorem, the so-called fundamental theorem of invertible matrices, that gives us some criteria for when the matrix C that I construct in this fashion, when it's actually going to have an inverse. What we've seen for a long time now is that the existence of a matrix inverse is actually equivalent to a bunch of other properties of the matrix. For example, C will have an inverse if C can be row reduced to the identity matrix. Or C will have a unique inverse if and only if we can always solve non-homogeneous linear systems for every vector B we put on the right-hand side. Or we're only going to have an invertible matrix C when the only solution of the homogeneous linear system with coefficient matrix C, if the only solution of that is X equals zero. And we have two other conditions. We need the rank of C to equal N, or the determinant of C to not equal zero. Any one of these five conditions, if it's true for this matrix C we construct in this fashion, it's going to tell us whether or not C itself is invertible. But the actual condition we'll work with the most on Monday, though, is going to be this condition four. So C is invertible. That's only going to happen when, according to condition four, the rank of C is equal to, so this is a square matrix with n rows and n columns. We'll need the rank of C to equal n. Now, the rank of C, that's identical to the dimension of the column space of C. And in fact, the dimension of column space of C is going to equal to the number of basis vectors. For the column space of C. And the number of basis vectors you're going to have, well, that's going to be equivalent into the number of linearly independent columns of C. Because if you have n linearly independent columns, you're going to have a basis for the column space of C. And each one of these linearly independent columns is going to be interpretable then as a basis vector. And so when you count them up, you'll get the dimension of the column space, which has to equal n. So what is this condition really telling us? For C to be invertible, we'll need n linearly independent columns, but the way we're making C is we're using eigenvectors of the matrix A to construct the columns. So what we'll really need is n linearly independent columns. Well, let me write it this way. N linearly independent eigenvectors of A to use as columns for C. So we use eigenvectors because we want this matrix C to diagonalize A. But this matrix C also has to be invertible. So we're going to need that the columns that we use to create C, we need them to be linearly independent. So each of these eigenvectors that we use to create this has to be linearly independent. Okay, so I'll continue with this discussion on Monday. The goal of Monday's lecture is to not necessarily analyze all the eigenvectors of C and make sure that they're linearly independent. Rather, the goal of Monday's lecture C is to have conditions on the matrix A that will tell us whether or not we have enough linearly independent eigenvectors to create a matrix C that we can invert and thereby diagonalize A. But that's the story that will be explained more completely on Monday. So what I'll do now, though, is simply stop lecture, wish you a happy Easter weekend, and I'll see you again on Monday. You're welcome, Ella. Let's see.